You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework.
Essentially, it's a concept I've arrived at. What is keeping big incumbent institutions, in that case banks, from doing the right thing? We all knew agile is needed. We were all clear on human-centered design. So what seemed to be the problem?
Hey everyone, it's Jason Baum, Director of Member Experience at DevOps Institute, and this is the Humans of DevOps podcast. Welcome back. I hope you've had a great week. On today's episode, we're going to just jump right in because we need all the time we can to talk about this. We're going to focus on psychological safety today. Psychological safety to me is something that I feel is a human right. I feel like we have the right to be psychologically safe in the workplace. That being said, it's a little more complicated to that. It's a group dynamic in teams. It's a concept defined by academics, in particular, Professor Amy Edmondson of Harvard, and studied by Google in their project Aristotle. It's been proven to be the cornerstone of any team's productivity. Teams that have high psychological safety are up to 40% more productive. In 2019, State of DevOps report found that this culture of psychological safety is predictive of software delivery performance, organizational performance, and productivity. Here to discuss the topic with me is Duena Blomstrom. Duena is the co-founder, CPO, and CEO of People Not Tech, and the author of People Before Tech, a book about the importance of psychological safety and teamwork in the digital age. She's also a speaker, writer, publishes weekly LinkedIn newsletters on chasing psychological safety, and the future is agile, a Forbes, as well as being a Forbes contributor. She's the creator of the emotional banking and human debt concepts, and authored a book titled Emotional Banking About Fixing Culture in the FinTech World and Listening to Customers' Feelings About Money. Well, I have a lot of feelings about money. So Duena, welcome to the podcast. Are you ready to get human?
Yes. Very, very excited to be here. A big fan of the DevOps Institute. I've always been.
Oh, awesome.
This is a treat for me. So thank you for having me.
It's very exciting to have you. I'm really appreciative of you coming on to talk about this. This is a topic that's pretty deep, I will say.
The mother load of all topics. Yes.
It really is. When you talk psychological safety, you're the creator of the human debt concept. Perhaps our listeners have heard about psychological safety. I think it would be great to start with human debt and talk about that. So maybe if you could explain it, maybe just kind of define it, explain what that means.
The easiest definition ever, because I wrote it, so I can kind of change it as I give it back to you. But as long as we all agree and understand what the core of it, I'm happy. But essentially, it's a concept I've arrived at as I was studying, in short, what is keeping big incumbent institutions, in that case, banks, from doing the right thing. Doing the right thing by their consumers is what I didn't quite understand, what the holdup was. We all knew agile is needed. We were all clear on human-centered design. We all kind of knew all the buzzwords. We even, all of us, were able to tell you what the perfect digital experience was. So what seemed to be the problem? So as I was researching that, it occurred to me that much as I don't want that to be the answer, it is a organizational issue. And everyone has essentially too big of a cultural problem to be accessing the new mindset that we need for agile, and to be accessing the speed we need to deliver at, and the kind of the type of collaboration that needs out of our people. So when I was figuring out why they couldn't do better by their consumers, the answer really was it's because they can't do better by their own people. And really what that means to me, or to the definition of human debt, is that just the same way that we acquire technical debt, and everyone listening to this knows full well what I'm on about, is the same way that we've acquired human debt, which is the equivalent for people. Practically any time that we have started something to fix something in the workplace and kind of dropped it, Anytime that a program that we were trying in an enterprise became a second-hand citizen or forgotten, or it got funding pulled, or the management change, or people fought and there was tension, or there was toxicity, or there was no, just hundreds of examples in which we create human debt, as we as humans, we as organizations. And it's unfortunately, if you start looking at it that way, you start seeing it everywhere, and there's no real organization that doesn't have any human debt. The only thing you can do is start without it. And the big digital winners have done that. They started from no human debt, and then with it in mind, they tried not to get any. But for the rest of us who didn't even know what it was, weren't quite that concerned. We didn't put people first. We put people as an afterthought. We created human debt, and we are creating it every day that we don't do human work. And if you look at the human work being done in the workplace today, you'd be able to say how big that debt is, because we don't do any. We don't even let people express the idea that they might have any kind of feelings at work, that they're meant to come in there, do some code, then disappear and not bother us in any unprofessional way. And that cannot continue, obviously, and we're creating more and more of this human debt. So in short, human debt is all the wrongs we have unrighted by our people, your D&I, or when we don't pay them well, when we don't respect them, when we don't like them, when they don't have psychological safety. And because of that human debt, we cannot be winning like the guys that don't have it.
I'm still fascinated by companies that are like, we give 7 PTO days, and you know, our work from home policy is, you know, when can be done, you know, something that's very wishy-washy, or parental leave, you get 2 weeks, something like that. And they flout it like this is a good thing. Yeah, there is a lot of human debt out there. And I guess we're starting to see companies recognize that, but, as someone who talks to people like yourself or companies who are, incorporating a lot of these positive, things to focus on the human, why is it forgotten pretty much all the time and was the norm, right? How we operated prior to, obviously it's still going on, but I think this big shift, obviously caused by the pandemic, probably the one of the, if not the only positive to come out of it, is this recognition, because everyone paused and said, hey, wait a minute. But why was it the norm? And why do we still sometimes forget about it?
I think it's worse than we forget about it. I think collectively we don't want to admit it exists. When we do, it feels too big to tackle. When we do tackle it, we then end up, in particular, the bigger the organization, the less probable it is you're going to have the superheroes that have, or you're going to have superheroes and people with their hearts in the right places, what I call these people that are really putting themselves on the line to do the right thing by other humans in their organizations. But so I think what's happening really is we were operating in an incorrect structure that wasn't fit for purpose. The way the business world was trying to shoehorn a completely different way of doing things into an existing, very corseted way of doing things was never going to work. We all knew in the industry that kind of, by the industry, I mean, all of us that knew what Agile was, knew that something big will have to happen, and that there's no way we can continuously cram. We can have it here in this corner while command and control are happening, while teams are not teams, while people don't discuss the dynamics inside them, while we don't allow humans to be humans at all. We cannot do that. It's just not happening. And we knew this, all of us, but we just thought, essentially, hopefully, eventually, the other shoe will drop and people will just come along. That would have happened, but in my view, without COVID, it would have been a much longer process. So I think in the wake of COVID, like you say, the biggest win is this. Everyone that claimed it cannot be done has to shut up. It can be done. And now that it is being done, how do we function? What do? You don't have line of sight. You can't be sure that this developer is not on Facebook. What do you do instead? And more so from an organizational perspective, and I'd like to be clear about this. I hate the term organization, and I normally very rarely ever touch it, because to me, organizations are as real as Santa Claus, right? What is an organization? If we wait for the organization to fix anything, it's never going to happen at all, right? So we can't be talking about it. It gets my goat every time I see these hundreds of LinkedIn posts about the organization should do this. Don't we agree that the organization is that? It's nice and lovely to have a common enemy. And if we just want it so that we bitch over beer, we should keep it. But if we want to change anything, we need to stop talking about it. And I mean, even like the big thinkers and stuff, everyone.
You're so right. I love it. I'm like, preach, Duane, because you're so right with this organization. Mitt Romney, who, whatever you feel about politics, had this line about company or organizations are people, like that line. And it's like, and that one stuck with me because it's like, yeah, because no kidding. Like who makes up the organization? One of the newest titles that I heard that I really love, and I know it's probably, maybe now it's a couple years old, is the chief culture officer. Someone whose job is purely to focus on.
I take great joy in asking why that position exists in most places. And as you can imagine, that doesn't land very well with people. I'm not their favorite. I'd like to be the kind of human being who is smart enough to be strategic and diplomatic about this, because the size of the issue requires people who are strategic and diplomatic and know how to slowly and calmly seep into the consciousness of these sleepy and risk adverse execs and go, I'm serious now, we gotta do this human work thing now, this is now the time. Maybe there's a way to do that. Not me, I cannot. I just cannot comprehend how we can reliably just go to sleep and wake up knowing we are not doing the best we can, and the things we should be doing are not hard to do. We are simply, for whatever reason, have entered collectively as humans this denial of things are going to be the way things are going to be, and I can't really affect this because it's too big and it's too complicated. And it's absolute bollocks, to use an English word. I don't know if it's allowed on your podcast or not, but
it's absolutely allowed. Go for it. There's no filter here.
Appreciate that. And it's borderline. I think even the BBC allows bollocks, because you just never know what they mean. But it is absolute poppycock, because we can do these things. There is no to-do about the human debt that isn't breakable into a list on a backlog and then into tickets that you can move on your to-doing. If you're not doing that, it's just you don't want to. And in quite honestly, we're going back to the organization thing now. There are now topics that are organizational. Much as the organization itself is useless in terms of changing anything, it does exist as a post-factum entity that fucks up everything for us, if you stop to think about it. Because most organizations, and we're touching now on the crux of the issue, have gone through this. Like, you were asking, why is that? How did we end up there? We ended up there because we made the business world respond to a different kind of to-do than we were doing now, right? We're like in the industrial era, that was fine. The accountancy of the 90s, we could do that. We could have people come into the office and we'll look at their screens. That's gonna work. She's not gonna work if we're trying to write agile pair programming dojo things. That's just not gonna work for us. So the reason it was old and needed shaking up wasn't necessarily evil, but what that brought are structures that are now firmly in place and no one will question them at most enterprises. And you're going to have like these, as if they're coming from Moses scriptures or something. We cannot touch the idea that we have this one department. We cannot question what this person is doing. We cannot discuss, and then like concrete things like why do you have a culture officer? And why do you have someone in charge of engagement? What does engagement mean to you? For instance, I'll give you an example. You as an organization, what does it mean? What's engagement? Because if it is calculating an NPS score, then you should scrap it and stop doing that. This is ridiculous. You have an entire department of people that are buying NPS score measurings, and then you have an entire workforce that's going, oh, for God's sake, again, why are we doing this? Nobody cares. And if they care, they punish me for it. So there's no real reason for us to even be concerning ourselves with the topic of engagement. It's not that we don't want our employees engaged. It's just that we're going about everything the wrong way. Because finally, coming back to it, we were operating on these old structures. In the new structures, we have to go about everything a completely different way.
Oh my gosh. As you're talking, there's so many things that are coming into my head. I love what you're saying. I bang my head sometimes because you said you're right. It needs to come from the employees, right? The organization as a whole is never gonna. There's no change that's going to happen if you rely on the organization. Why is it? And there are a few things I want to ask you, but why is it that there seems to be those who recognize this? They recognize those issues and are like screaming about it, right? For change, let's do this. Not only that, there's studies that prove, right? I mean, look at what I had read, the 40%. There are so many studies that prove that if you improve culture, if you give more time, if you, hell, 4-day work weeks, I've been saying this on the podcast, the it's amazing the productivity that the productivity improvement. So, and even work from home. So I question these decisions are not necessarily based on, hey, we're going to make money, because that's actually not proven. It's proven the opposite. So it's purely, these are decisions based on, I just want to, it's better for, I don't know, maybe they want to be in the office, for example. I don't know why these decisions are being made.
It's a really important point. You've touched on something amazing, which is, why, if we have this much clarity on the numbers, and we all know, you can wake up any CEO of any bank at 2 a.m. and they'll tell you, yes, active disengagement costs me $3 billion a year. I know that, obviously, for like everyone told me, right? McKinsey told me, must be true. So they know, right? They know it costs money to have people that are, and it stands to reason, you've employed an army of people, some of which you don't even need, but nobody's gonna question who you do and do not need. And then you've mistreated them to the point that they're now half useful. So obviously it costs you twice the money, if not more, that you're doing this. But it seems to be, why are you doing this? Why are you affording the luxury of having people disengage, not at their best of their ability, not high performing? Why is this happening to you as an exec, right? And I think the answer to that is it's this complete paralysis at the level that people are at, where nobody's going to point when the emperor is butt naked. They're not going to be, there's no psychological safety at the top. There's no teams at the top. So who all is going to say, right, guys, this is bad. Let's scrap everything and think of everything. Let's look at the human diet. Let's question why we have 500 people. Let's question if we need HR, because maybe these guys in DevOps have gotten their heads around collaboration and team dynamics better. Let's let them do it for a while. Or let's question why we have work week to begin with. Why don't people just produce outcomes that we need out of them? Let's have those conversations. Who all is supposed to have that? Who, what exec team do you know that is a true team, has a Trello board, a Jira board, I don't care what, has a board, has a physical board, or at least a shared email list of backlogs, and they work off of it to make their enterprise better? None. They don't exist. Teams don't exist at the top. We have work groups at the top where every exec comes in and tells you how great they are. They do a fest of impression management, which is the dark side of psychological safety, and they tell you how amazing they are. No one looks incompetent. No one looks like they made any mistakes. There's no one to blame on anything. Everyone goes home, it's fine. There's no teams at the top. They are not psychologically safe. No one can point when we have these fundamental issues. And one of those issues, finally, we get to it, is, like I was saying earlier, the topic of people is now falling through a major crack. That major crack is the difference between HR and IT. Unfortunately for HR, they, for whatever reason, I can't quite comprehend what happened to them. It's tragedy if you stop to think about it. They lost the ability of advocating and helping people in the enterprise. They have now reduced themselves. I should say this. I apologize to anyone listening to this who is HR and is woke and is a superhero and is trying real hard. It's not you guys, it's everyone else. But the everyone else has kind of shortened themselves to only do legal things, to only employ and unemploy people and send them a paper home. It's an admin job, one we will replace with machines tomorrow. We don't need you to do that. We need you to sit next to the CEO and tell him, be Counselor Troy, and go like, I read the mind of these developers. What they really need is another dojo. That.
An advocate.
An advocate for you. Yes. If you can't be that, and you know who is doing that job these days? we make software that would help them. You'd think when we made our software, we thought sillily years ago, we thought when we produce this and we let it out and we tell the world and Amy Edmondson has seen it and it measures psychological safety and it brings all this to the enterprise, people are gonna love it. Watch all HR breaking our doors down. In all of our clients, ask me how many of them started from an HR perspective. It's a negligible amount. The vast majority of our clients are CTOs and CEOs who went like, okay, I've ignored this people problem long enough. If I really want to be producing these KPIs, I'm going to have to make these people have psychological safety, have teams, have an ability to work from anywhere. Not because I like them a lot more or I'm an advocate, but because I'm trying to make this thing happen and nobody else is coming to help me. So our clients are people who just need the human bit to work, which is dramatic. It should be HR only. If anything, we are a nuisance to HR. Anytime we show up, they can immediately tell that the topic we're fixing is so deep and is so big that it will throw up all the other organizational issues, and they immediately dislike us and they would like us to go away and come back with an NPS score measure.
Yeah, they shut it down.
Hey, humans of DevOps. It's Nixon here from DevOps Institute. I'm dropping by to share how you can scale up and advance your career with the DevOps Institute Premium Membership. Our goal is to empower you to gain the edge you need to advance your DevOps skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning. A Premium Membership gives you all access to what DevOps Institute has to offer. How does getting 30% off all certification exams sound? What about having access to a tool that can assess your team's DevOps capabilities? And if that wasn't enough, members can also read our entire library of skill books to support you during your DevOps journey. Get started today for the price of a cup of coffee by going to devopsinstitute.com/membership. Head to the link in the episode description to receive 20% off your DevOps Institute premium membership.
Yeah, it's, you know, I do have mixed feelings here because I don't want to totally call out HR as a field. However, I will say, like, when you're talking about psychological safety, you know, my wife and I always joke, it's like you have HR and they always tell you, oh, you have a problem, go talk to HR, go talk to HR. And you're like, I'm not talking to HR. That's the mouthpiece of the company. Their best interest, like you said, is don't sue us, right? I mean, that's their vested interest, is protection of the company and not necessarily the individual. And so how do you feel safe? You don't feel safe. That's not endorsing psychological safety. So who then do you turn to? Who can you trust? How do you build that trust? Where is it coming from? Is it coming from DevOps? Is it coming from your team? Hopefully your manager. They're the ones have to push it through, right? But then you have the people, and some of them, they could be great people, but it's like, for whatever reason, like you said, they're so turned off to the idea of potential change, or it's just like, that's not your job, and it's no one's job, right? It's never anyone's job. We need to do this. Don't focus on that. That stuff, that's a waste of time.
Yeah, no, I love this question because it touches on so many things. And I think, or your comment, not your question, but I think it's super important that we all go, at the very minimum, we all go, yes, for all our sins, if these are things that are making up human debt, we have some. What do we do about it? And by the way, there's organizational level human debt, and then there's team level human debt. And one of the last ones that I always quote to my mind is when teams go, one of the things that creates more debt is when teams go, they blame the organization. So like, they'll come fix it. This is not on us, this is them. That alone creates human debt, because no, a lot of this work is and should be at your level. And I'm a humongous advocate. If we agree, yes, we have human debt, then we have to do something about it. And the doing something about it has to be distributed at the team level. That's the answer of it. The answer of it is not your managers, not your leadership team, not your programs that are led by, I don't even care about the HR, not HR conversation now. And again, for the record, there are amazing HR people out there, undoubtedly, obviously, just the vast majority of them have let themselves be not utilized at the best is what. But again, this is not about HR or not HR. This is too big of a job for any magical HR. Even if HR retained their ability to really kill it and do all these things, they would still not be the ones to have to run a fixing of the human debt just because it is too big at this point. So at this point, the only thing we can do with all of these things we haven't done is to distribute them, to give them to the team, to say to the team, look, I need your help. I know you. We've been telling you you need to write this code and these are your tickets, but I'll clean some of your schedule. That's what indeed server leadership can do for them. And that's what a good Scrum Master would do, or a product owner, or whoever. They'll go, right, follow better. And everyone completely connects to that. The problem is everyone has overflowing agendas, is being the principles of Agile that say you have personal responsibility, you grab this ticket if you know you can afford the time frame and so on and so forth. So those agencies don't exist. People don't feel empowered to say, no, I have way too much on my plate and I want to have a team action with you guys and understand about your kids. I can't take this other coding ticket. People don't do that. They're not empowered. Nobody makes time for them. So they're overwhelmed. So they have what I call human work resistance. They immediately, you immediately go, even people that get on our product, all developers have a first, no, not for me. This is not what they hired me for. I am not a psychologist. I don't know what they want. I am not put here to talk about feelings. You're asking me to talk about feelings. I am not the guy to be talking about this. So there's a lot of that. Plus, developers or not, everyone in the workplace has spent a good 10, 20, 30 years being asked to come in and be professional. Tenant of being professional is number one thing is do not have any emotion. Do not bring your personal life over here. Do not be a human. Just sit here and write code or answer the phone, whatever it is that we hired you for. So now we're telling them, oh, sorry about that. That was kind of dumb. Looking at these guys that are doing it right, could you be doing some of the other stuff where you recognize your emotions and understand the emotions of others and work with them better? Could you be doing that? But could you also be doing it some other hours? Because these hours that I'm paying you for, you still have to finish these tasks. That's what where we're at today.
It's I think I have referenced this show on this podcast, but there is a show on Apple called Severance, and it's about how they split the human mind, essentially, so that there is your work self, and then you have no memories of your home, of your personal life when you're at work.
While you're at work.
And then there's another self that is your home life with no memories of work. So you have no idea what's going on. Your work life exists in work only. Your brain, you never leave. And then your home, you never leave. So it's so fascinating because that just the concept alone of the show is brilliant.
I can't wait to go check it out. Yeah. It's a good comment, depending on how they took it. But yes.
Right. And it's just kind of what you're talking about. It's like, for whatever reason, that the norm, right? Yeah, you are your professional self, and then you're everything else, your personal, and you have to separate them. And it's like, well, it's not as easy as just turning off who you are when you're at work. I always struggled with it. Now it's great, but because it's more accepted.
You shouldn't have. Yeah. No one should have done. Reality of it is, no one should have presumed we only pay people for physical output. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. We don't. We always did pay them for, I mean, you know, kind of, if you take with a grain of salt the incredible shambles that performance appraisals of all kinds are, right? And if you kind of, and from that, if you ignore the fact that the reality of it is because we didn't ask them to be human at work, we don't pay them for any of the human work. So that's the second part of the resistance. When people finally go like, oh my God, this could make my life better. But wait a minute, do I really want to do this as an extracurricular activity? Because no one is paying me for this stuff, right?
Time is so valuable.
Until the time we go back and we go like, right, this was wrong. We're really sorry. Can you do half your time on your team stuff and then half your time on your work stuff? And here's all your money. And the more time you spend learning, the more we pay you. The more time you spend considering the emotions of your teammates and that translates into psychological safety and collaboration, the more we pay you. That's where we need to get to. And the gap between not even admitting we have a problem to changing the way we work completely, and I don't mean whether we come to the office or not, but the structures in which we work, is huge. But the show you're describing is exactly what we have copiously, ridiculously expected out of people so far. It was never viable, but we just never stopped to. It wasn't clear how unviable it was in the old world when you didn't have agile, when you didn't have this extreme need for speed and collaboration. It is blatantly clear today. And if we want it solved, we have to help our people start to do this work for us.
And we didn't. I don't even know if we really touched on psychological safety that much in this conversation. I mean, we did, we didn't. I'm not going to necessarily ask you to define it because I think we defined it early on. But what is the difference between, or is there a difference between psychological safety and trust? And then how do you build it amongst your teams?
Love that question. Absolutely adore that question. The most all-encompassing of questions. So I try to be succinct, not always successful. Definition wise, and you touched on it initially, it's been studied by other academics, but the person that's done most work on it has been Amy Edmondson, and she has this amazing body of research. But that research comes from the medical field and the aviation field. And it wasn't until, like you said, Google published Project Aristotle that the term psychological safety kind of entered the vocabulary of the DevOps community and became a thing to the business world through the IT side of things. So the definition that she uses, and it's quite clear, is psychological safety is a state in which you are not afraid to take interpersonal risks in your team. And it sounds like, so what if you are afraid of risks and so on? The humongous difference between a team that is psychologically safe and one that isn't is their ability to truly bring themselves to work and be their authentic selves. They can raise points. They always speak up. They're never afraid to say what's on their mind. And all of that obviously just translates into a lot better outcomes. It's quite that simple. We took that definition and kind of worked on it quite a lot over the last few years, because this is all we do at PeopleNotTech, psychological safety. This is our day job, right? So we very early on worked out, right, we have loads of human debt. How are we going to fix it? We need something that fixes it quick. And if you look at Google's findings in Project Aristotle, psychological safety is at the top. And then there are four other topics that they found are crucial if teams want to succeed, right? And those are dependability. And we thought to ourselves, well, we're making software. How is our software going to affect the dependability of any other software shop? No chance. We don't even know what they're measuring. Half of them, no, 90% of them are not measuring anything anyways. And it just depends on how they're doing agile, so we can't really touch that. Then structure and clarity, which is a huge one. It's probably the crux of why organizations are as they are, which essentially just says, are these people crystal clear what the deal is or not? And that question is no for most teams. So, and also equally not something we could have affected. So we were like, we completely get how important it is, and it's the only thing the organization needs to give you other than money and resources. But you know what? We can't help with that because that's a very organizational thing. And then the other two topics are purpose and impact. Do you feel as a team that you have a purpose, and do you feel you're making an impact? Great things, but we couldn't really directly affect those. So that's why we've laser focused on psychological safety. We're like, right, there is one thing, there's a team dynamic, and we can then separate it into behaviors and start working on each of those behaviors. Then we have an empowered team that can do this for themselves. We no longer throw it on the manager. We no longer expect someone to model vulnerability, which is, I sound overly critical of that because it's nice to have in the vernacular, but the next step above that has to be, no, everyone has to do things. And those things are recognize my feelings, recognize my behavior, recognize the behavior of the people around me, and together want to work to change those things for the better. That is literally your only answer. And it's doable. If you start splitting it, it's absolutely doable. What stops us has been a lack of tools. Things like the things we're making are very, very new, to be fair. It didn't exist whatsoever. So even if you wanted to measure psychological safety, you'd be like, oh, I think we have some of it. People say they kind of feel...
You were critical of the NPS score. What are there tools to measure psychological safety?
Well, you know, it's really difficult for me to talk about it because I really hate sounding salesy because we make it. But when we went to the market to try and make a tool to measure it, we didn't find anything. There was Amy's questionnaire. there was a Spotify, obviously the Spotify questions, and then there were, that was it. Other than that, there were engagement surveys, completely not the thing that we needed at all. And then there were, you know, kind of performance surveys and KPI measurements and stuff, none of which were quite it, what we wanted. And when we went to the market, the reason we looked is because I thought, let's find what the many psychological safety measuring tools and incorporate them into a platform. To my surprise, there were no many, there were no none. So we had to make it from scratch. But the challenges we had were, what is it, right? And it's the question we're having this right now. What is it really? I mean, we all get it instinctively, right? It's not, I was saying we have a different definition at People Not Tech. It's that moment that we all can relate to when we were in a team, when we were literally making magic. We were going fast. Everyone knew what's what. Everyone was at the best of their abilities. No one ever didn't say something. There were no awkward, there may have been awkward moments. We were embracing them. People were saying freely when something was wrong. We all know what it's like to be in a magical psychologically safe team. So how rare is that? And some people have to think all the way back to kindergarten to remember one of those. And so if we all know, then what is it though? We cannot measure, my developers were like, okay, but we need titles for these, like for the, you know, kind of the database. We cannot just call it the magical thing we can kind of feel. So to actually define our algorithm, we had to undertake a very serious piece of research to separate the behaviors in psychological safety. And we ended up with six things that we're measuring today, which are, is the team flexible? Is the team resilient? Because they can be flexible, but break over time. Is the team engaged? And our engagement means, is the team emotionally connected? Not engaged, NPS core-like, but do they know each other's kids' names? Are they aware that this, do they care about this other guy or not? That's engagement in the team, and not would they recommend the manager? Nobody cares. And then we measure, are they learning together? Are they courageous? And are they speaking up? And those things, each of those behaviors, you can work on it and you should work on it. And so we've created essentially what is like a CBT for teams, if that makes sense. So now that you know how you're doing and you've seen it, and this particular behavior is where you have issues, let's work on it together, just us at this level, at this bubble level. And the fact that you see the data and the fact that you work on your team health together is transformational. Those same people that were telling us, not my job, I don't have the time for this, I'm not a psychologist, those same people, you give them some time with the tool and the right empowerment, and you tell them they can do it, they are transformed. They ask, can I do more? Can I do more team actions? Can I spend more time with my colleagues? Because they see the results of that. It's like they're happier, they do better work, the code is cleaner, they produce things faster. So they know that that's transformation, and they take up to it like you wouldn't believe it. I've seen developers cry. I've seen people go, oh my God, like, we don't need to wait for the organization to come fix us. We don't need to wait for HR to come fix us. We can and should do this thing ourselves. And I think that's the key there. It doesn't have to be only our tool or only psychological safety. There are other bits that need working on, right? The ability of human beings to have self-respect enough to be self-caring, or making sure that they have the space to think of their well-being. Fine, all those things need working on. But you can work on them at the team level. That is what I'm saying, that we need to distribute it and distribute it fast.
It's amazing what happens when you can invest in the employee, right? And the employee experience and their personal psychological safety, and making sure that they can produce and be comfortable in the team and like the team. Gosh, that sounds nice, right? I mean, it's...
Well, it's got to be they have fun or
yeah.
They have anything good happening in their life.
You know, I gotta say, this is just me just like putting myself outside a little bit. I'm relatively new to the tech industry. You know, this is, I'm in the second year, and I have to say how much I love it, because ironically, the tech industry, I feel, is becoming the most progressive towards the human. And I think that's so, at first, there's so much irony in that, but it's amazing and it is refreshing.
You're right. That is the irony of it. But the reason for that is what should keep execs awake is It does not work any other way. We cannot have agile if we don't do this people work. We cannot make things fast if we don't do this people work. We cannot do this people work just by kind of sending a program or asking people to look at a TED talk. These are a ticket that has to exist in everyone's like exact whip line. Every week, every team should have, what in the hell are they doing about X behavior? Like, if you really want to know why your code went some type of way, then you need to have your Jira in a retro on this side and your what the hell happened with the human work on this other side, so you can kind of start seeing patterns and work on that behavior. Mm-hmm. And people want to. They just haven't been given the tools to do that and the permission to do that, really.
Yeah, yeah. I think we could talk about this all day. I love talking to you, Duane. It's very refreshing to hear you speak, and the authenticity just comes out. I think you are very passionate about this topic, and I think I would love to talk to you and continue the conversation and have you back, because I think we covered maybe one of my questions and we just ended up just going on our own here in this conversation. But it was wonderful and so great to have you as a guest.
Thank you so much. It was amazing. You're right. We have it always feels, this is the size of the human, that it always feels unfinished.
Yeah, because it is, right? Okay, so we always finish the podcast by asking a more personal question. So here's yours. If you could be remembered for one thing, what would it be?
Oh, wow. You said that we could edit if we wanted to.
Yeah, there's no right answer. It's just however you feel.
No right answer, but I would have loved to have believed that I have made some type of difference in terms of people getting a little less of the dread and a little less of the my life is not worth it, if that makes sense. So I would just hope that there are some developers somewhere. I don't want them to ever have seen my face or read my book or heard about me whatsoever, or their execs. I just want us to finally get to a place where we are consistently doing human work at every level of the organization, and it's a natural, normal part of our vernacular. If I could have done anything to move that needle, that would have been amazing.
I love it. I think we are 100% on the same page with all this. Obviously, the humans of DevOps, this is what we're all about. Like I said, I think I could listen to you speak all day. So,
well, happy to come back and be up in arms about this anytime you like, because I feel like we have this lifting work. We're going to be doing almost the same conversations, hopefully just as annoyed, because the day we're not annoyed anymore, we don't care enough anymore. So
that's true.
Happy to come back anytime you liked.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Duane. It was an absolute pleasure. And thank you for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. I'm going to end this episode the same way I always do, encouraging you to become a member of DevOps Institute to get access to even more great resources just like this one. Until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and most of all, stay human. Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.